Ride to the Rescue. A joint U.S. and South Vietnamese push broke the siege at Khe Sanh by John Prados. January 1968, before Tet. General William C. Westmoreland, his Military Assistance Command, Vietnam, MACV, and every level of the U.S. and South Vietnamese hierarchies were obsessed with an outpost, a combat base, really, up near the Demilitarized Zone, DMZ, that separated South Vietnam from North Vietnam. There, a handful of Marine rifle battalions, some pacification specialists of a combined action company, Green Berets leading a force of Montagnards, and operators of the shadowy MACV Special Operations Group were holding onto a set of hill positions ringed by the North Vietnamese Army. On January 21st, the enemy opened a sustained artillery barrage that gravely damaged the combat base, destroying its main ammunition dump. Under that cover, North Vietnamese troops advanced against Hill 861, one of the strong points, and the village of Khe Sanh. They failed in the hills, but captured the village. From that day on, the combat base struggled under siege, constantly shelled and repeatedly threatened with new ground attacks. Marines now did the Khe Sanh shuffle, darting from bunker to trench to evade the North Vietnamese gunners. The Americans were obliged to supply Khe Sanh by air. Only one road connected the combat base to MACV positions in the lowlands, and the enemy had cut that months earlier. Now the North Vietnamese closed in to besiege Khe Sanh. MACV's inability to utilize Route 9, the road that paralleled the DMZ, weighed ever heavier with every airplane or helicopter damaged or destroyed on the dangerous resupply missions. Within days, Westmoreland would be diverted to putting out the fires of the Tet Offensive, but he laid the groundwork for an overland rescue operation beforehand. On June 25th, the MACV chief created a forward headquarters in the military region covering Khe Sanh and put his deputy, Lieutenant General Creighton W. Abrams, in charge of it. Westmoreland also called in Major General John J. Tolson, leading the CAV, the vaunted 1st Cavalry Division, Air Mobile, that in the process of deploying to that same region. Westy called Tolson to begin planning a relief expedition. This contingency became a fixture in MACV thinking. Once Tet had begun and Westmoreland and Washington traded cables on reinforcing South Vietnam, he used Khe Sanh's relief as one of his justifications for more troops. With Tet, Tolson's CAV became embroiled in the furious fighting around Hue. Marines and South Vietnamese troops famously fought within the city, but the CAV operated against North Vietnamese supply lines to the west. As extra reinforcements arrived, 1st Cavalry units were shifted north to the Quang Tri Dong Ha area, where Route 9 originates at the latter town. The division's 3rd Brigade, which had borne the brunt of the fight outside Hue, rested and took over base security duties. On March 2nd, the generals gathered at Da Nang for a command conference. Hashing out strategy were Abrams, Tolson, Robert Cushman, the Marine 3-star leading 3rd Marine Amphibious Force, or 3rd MAF, the regional headquarters, and Rath Von M. Tompkins, the Marine 2-star who led the 3rd Marine Division. Tompkins recalled Abrams speculating on the CAV taking over security in the coastal zone and the 3rd Marine Division attacking west to Khe Sanh. Tompkins got to his feet and declared this the finest idea he had ever heard, and he claims Tolson supported it, having no more desire to go to Khe Sanh than a cat does to have hip pockets. That doesn't square with Tolson's account of 1st Cavalry Division planning or Westmoreland's previous orders. The brass at this meeting listened as CAV staff detailed an offensive scheme. It became known as Operation Pegasus, after the winged horse of mythology. It did have CAV units protecting the coastal area, but Tolson's 3rd Brigade became key to the operation, and Abrams, in fact, gave the CAV honcho operational control of the entire offensive. Westmoreland joined them March 10th when he approved the plans. He stipulated that the South Vietnamese Army, ARVN, needed to have a role in the operation as well. As preparations continued, Khe Sanh seemed more and more threatened. A satellite special forces camp at Long Ve was overrun February 7th. The next night brought an assault at a close-in position of the base defenses. A Marine C-130 transport, destroyed on the airstrip February 10th, led to a halt of landings beginning 2 days later. The high point of artillery bombardments at the combat base came February 23rd, when 1,300 rounds slammed it. On the last night of February, just before the Pegasus planners convened, Khe Sanh's artillery and air support broke up a North Vietnamese assault force that might have been as big as a regiment. The combat base definitely looked to be in trouble, but Pegasus could not simply be launched out of the blue. To sustain an overland offensive, Route 9 had to be restored and improved out to the rock pile, a marine position in the foothills to the east. Bridges needed to be strengthened and more construction material stockpiled for the road out to Kaesong. The CAB needed a well-provisioned landing zone as a springboard for its 3rd Brigade, which would lead the charge. Kalu, a hilltop village at a bend of Route 9, was selected for the launch point. It would be called Landing Zone LZ Stud. Marine Engineer Battalion 11 and Navy Seabees, Naval Mobile Construction Battalion 5, did the hard work on preparations. The start of Pegasus, originally timed for March 13th, was pushed back to April 1st. On March 26th, operating from LZ Stud, the CAB's Headhunter Scouts, Lieutenant Colonel Richard W. Diller's 1st Squadron, 9th Cavalry, began their reconnaissance flights toward Kaesong. The Headhunters prepped new LZs for combat assaults by finding suitable clearings and calling in aircraft to expand them using huge daisy-cutter bombs. As a final touch, on March 30th, a Marine Rifle Battalion, a CAB squadron, and a pair of Arvin Infantry Battalions began a diversionary attack on the coastal plain from Jolin toward the DMZ. The North Vietnamese do not appear to have been fooled. The last actual attack at Kaesong took place the day before, and U.S. intelligence reporting already indicated the enemy's withdrawal from the vicinity of the combat base. Pegasus jumped off at 7 a.m. April 1st. It was the biggest 3rd MAF offensive of the war, with 29,000 troops, 14 battalions with 300 choppers and 148 artillery pieces. Tolson had arrived at LZ Stud the previous day. The CAB was noted for its dynamic operational techniques, with an almost instant ability to redirect forces and firepower in response to new discoveries and changing conditions. Indeed, Captain Joseph W. Kinzer, senior advisor to the Arvin 3rd Airborne Task Force, the participating South Vietnamese Brigade, felt he learned more in a week interacting with the CAB than he had in the preceding 6 months. Despite that dynamism, Pegasus began with an old-fashioned ground advance. Conducted in the traditional manner, the weather had closed in and the choppers could not fly. Colonel Stanley S. Hughes, with his 1st Marine Infantry Regiment, made up the overland component of the attack. Hughes arrayed the 2nd Battalion 1st Marines on the north side of Route 9 and the 2nd Battalion 3rd Marines south of the road. The 11th Engineers followed, lifting mines and restoring the thoroughfare. The Marines crossed the line of departure precisely on time. "It was jungle, the worst kind you can find," observes Wayne T. Holland, a platoon commander with Hotel Company 2-1. "It was almost impossible to walk from objective to objective. The terrain was so rough, and the growth, the underbrush, so thick that we had to use helicopters. Signs of enemy presence were numerous, but few were encountered." The CAV got started when the weather cleared the afternoon of the first day, but cleared is a relative term. Only occasionally were air mobile ops possible before afternoon. Equally problematic, good weather came to be any time when the cloud ceiling rose to 500 feet or more. At that altitude, a North Vietnamese gunner could see a chopper at a distance of a mile and a half or so. Colonel Hubert S. Campbell, leading the 3rd Brigade, catapulted his 2nd Battalion 7th Cavalry into LZ Mike, forward of where the Marines were. Lieutenant Joseph E. Abodili, leading the 2nd Platoon of D Company, recalls thick jungle and mountainous terrain. He heard his arm jumping from the chopper. It was typical of CAB tactics that the LZ was chosen at the very last moment, practically with the choppers in motion. Abodili remembers they air assaulted the top of a mountain, circled by a river on three sides. They made for a little enemy threat and a good night's sleep, but there was little to do except lift out to a new LZ the next day. Abodili's platoon captured a 12.7-millimeter anti-aircraft gun there. Tolson sought to accelerate Pegasus by committing Colonel Joseph C. McDonough's 2nd Brigade earlier than planned. Most choppered into an LZ not far from Kaesong. Soon they were attacking the feature known as the Old French Fort. Lieutenant Colonel Robert Runkle, leading 1st Battalion, 5th Cavalry, against the French Fort, was killed, becoming the most senior officer casualty of Pegasus. An estimated enemy battalion held on to the position for the next 2 days, and the CAV fed in an additional formation, 2nd Battalion, 5th Cavalry, to overwhelm the defenses. Tolson also had the Marine garrison get into the fight, sallying to the south to take Hill 471, which offered a panoramic view of Quezon Combat Base. The unit that accomplished that feat was the storied Walking Dead, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines. Once in place, they had to beat off a battalion-sized North Vietnamese counterattack. By then, April 4th, Lieutenant Colonel Roscoe Robinson's 27th Cavalry were at LZ Thor and facing enemy mortars and artillery. 10 or 11 men in Abaldili's platoon alone got minor shrapnel wounds. The platoon encountered a couple of dead GIs as they pulled back into the perimeter. A medevac chopper was shot down. When North Vietnamese artillery shells proved to be duds, the troopers worried these might be chemical or nerve agents instead. But the North Vietnamese did not employ such weapons in this war. GIs got another scare when a rumor swept the battalion that they were going to be ordered to walk into Khe Sanh. That proved true, and the worst firefight yet happened when 2/7th tried to make its way down Route 9. Robinson's two lead companies recoiled after encountering heavy resistance. The North Vietnamese 2 left behind 83 dead. Suddenly, everyone was in motion. Abaldili thought of a race to the rescue. Marine official historian Jack Schulemsen saw it as a three-ring circus. The CAV's 3rd Brigade and the 1st Marines kept up the pressure along Route 9. The 1st Brigade joined the fight, opening LZ Snake, southeast of the former Long Vey Special Forces camp. The 2nd Brigade choppered its 212th Cavalry onto Hill 471 to relieve the Walking Dead. Those Marines moved on to Hill 552, which had been a North Vietnamese hotbed. The 2nd Battalion, 26th Marines, broke out of its strong point on Hill 558 and went for Hill 700. Tolson thought carefully about the mechanics of the relief and had decided he did not like the optics of cavalrymen arriving first at Khe Sanh Combat Base. Instead, he arranged for the Arvin 8th Airborne Battalion to air assault into the sector of the base held by the Arvin 37th Ranger Battalion. The old French fort fell to 2/5th Cavalry on April 7th. D Company of 2/7th, with Abaldili's platoon, walked into Khe Sanh on Route 9 on April 8th. The engineers completed the road connection on April 10th. Tolson had planned dozens of additional operations to clear the area around the combat base, but instead the CAV was immediately recalled for a thrust into the A Shao Valley. The division had suffered 41 or 59 dead, there are discrepancies, 207 or 251 wounded, and 5 missing. Marines lost 51 killed and 459 wounded. Of the Arvin, 33 were killed in action and 187 wounded. The body count for the North Vietnamese stood at 1,304, with 24 men captured. Significant amounts of food, equipment, and documents were captured as well. The cavalry and the Marines had ridden to the rescue. As we mark so many 50th anniversaries of the Vietnam conflict, the Battle of Khe Sanh is often mentioned, Operation Pegasus almost never. Let this serve to bring brave Marines and GIs back to mind once more. John Prados is a senior fellow of the National Security Archive and director of its Vietnam Documentation Project. His latest book is The Ghosts of Langley, Into the CIA's Heart of Darkness. Visit his website at johnprados.com. We asked for no reward but a nation's thanks. Vietnam War Commemoration, an opportunity to honor veterans and their families, by retired Major General James T. Jackson. A year ago, President Trump signed the Vietnam War Veterans Recognition Act of 2017, establishing March 29th as National Vietnam War Veterans Day. This new recognition is just one part of a historic trend. Across the nation, Americans are united in their desire to thank and honor Vietnam veterans and their families. VA estimates that we are losing as many as 382 Vietnam veterans a day, so we must act now. We have the opportunity to make a positive difference in the lives of every one of the 7 million living Vietnam and Vietnam-era veterans and each of their families. Reaching out to them with a sincere thank you for your service and sacrifice is a strong start. This initiative is the main focus of the United States of America Vietnam War Commemoration, a national 50th anniversary remembrance authorized by Congress, established under the Secretary of Defense, and launched by President Barack Obama in May 2012. This tremendous effort to show our thanks to Vietnam veterans and their families includes all U.S. veterans who served between November 1, 1955 to May 15, 1975, and their families. While we acknowledge the distinction between veterans who served in country, in theater, and or were stationed elsewhere during this period, We honor all who served. They are known to us simply as Vietnam veterans. Key to the commemoration, accompanying its primary objective, is its hometown-centric commemorative partner program. To date, more than 10,000 organizations at the local, state, and federal levels have committed to conducting two events per year that recognize and honor Vietnam veterans and their families. There are no costs associated with becoming a commemorative partner, and a mix of dedicated local and national businesses, corporations, veterans, and military organizations, associations, educational institutions, community groups, towns, cities, states, and others have stepped up to assist the nation in this noble effort. To date, our partners have honored millions of veterans in their hometowns, conducting more than 11,600 events since the commemoration's inaugural event at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in 2012. The American Legion is one of our allies. In May 2016, the National Executive Committee passed Resolution 14, supporting the Vietnam War's half-century commemoration. We encourage local posts to join as well. At these events, commemorative partners can present special Vietnam veteran lapel pins to living U.S. veterans who served during the war period, regardless of location, and/or certificates of honor to former POWs and family members of deceased and MIA veterans. Now is the time for all Americans to fully embrace the brave men and women who returned home from Vietnam, often to shame and disgrace, by publicly thanking them, as well as recognizing the sacrifices of their families. As veterans, retired service members, and families of those who served, Legion family members are encouraged to share this information with organizations they believe might be interested in becoming commemorative partners. To quote retired Army Colonel Albert Nahas, a Vietnam War veteran, "We had no expectations but to serve where duty called us. We asked for no reward except a nation's thanks." Learn more about the Vietnam War commemoration online at www.VietnamWar50th.com. Retired Army Major General James T. Jackson is Director of the United States of America Vietnam War Commemoration.